Mario.
Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Wade.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo Show 64, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. Like the name implies, we're going to talk about Nintendo 64 games. And we'll do them sort of semi-chronologically as they came out 21 years ago, as they are now the legal drinking age.
As I am doing right now, of course.
Indeed. There were a couple of games that I think are worth mentioning that came out in May of 1997, which is what we're up to. Mm-hmm. We're going to spend a majority of our focus on Hexen.
Yeah.
The other game is called War Gods, which I think we'll talk about next month because there really aren't notable releases for June 1997, so we'll bank that Western-style fighting game for next month. Because I haven't bought the cartridge yet, because there were about a million other games that came out this month.
Now, when you say Western-style fighting game, is it like a 2D side-scroller brawler, like Turtles in Time, or is it just like a straight fighter?
It's a player versus player fighter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I know there's like, this maybe next 3 or 4 months of releases 21 years ago saw a bunch of fighters. One of which, I forget the name of it, but I know one of them is actually a lot like Tekken, and that it's a 3D, like fully rendered character models fighting each other, not just like, you know.
Sprites, yeah. Or like Mortal Kombat, they're just JPEGs.
Yeah, exactly.
Going at it. Mm-hmm. So I did do a little bit of research because the game we're talking about is Hexen, like I mentioned, and it's for the Nintendo 64. It was originally a PC game, came out in 1995, and I had some research on the game that was in a Word document at work, and I forgot to print it. Oh. So now it's kind of shooting from the hip. So Ryan,
recite from memory everything about Hexen.
Try to remember anything, and it was actually really fun because I had, like, this list of stuff, like, historical events and, like, pop culture shit that happened in May of 1997, so we have this reference point for this game coming out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I'm just, I pulled up a quick fact sheet about May 1997, but I'm going from memory here as well, because the page doesn't want to
load. Colonel Wesley, completely unprepared.
Yep. So, Tony Blair was elected Prime Minister of the UK in May of 1997. That was like the real big political thing. The other political thing that I found was that was when the president of Russia at the time, whose name is escaping me, signed a peace treaty with NATO, which...
Boris Yeltsin?
Boris Yeltsin, yeah, that was him. Okay. It was a pretty historic event there. A couple of movies that premiered in May of 1997, Austin Powers International Man of Mystery.
A classic.
And Jurassic...
That's 21 years old, you're fucking kidding me.
Yep. And Jurassic Park The Lost World.
Which is now, like, on its, what, fifth sequel or something like that?
Oh, yeah. Jurassic World 2 comes out.
Which kind of looks like trash, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm sold on it.
I don't know. I mean,
And I like Jurassic World. I like the reboot. I thought that other one was fine.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know if I'm going to enjoy this at all. It looks kind of silly, frankly.
Okay. Well, you know, in a movie about genetically resurrected dinosaurs attacking people, I think it'll be par for the course.
So, I hate to say this, the game one of the NBA Finals was on June 1st. So, technically, can't talk about that.
There were a couple of interesting sports things that happened that I had on my list. Hang on, let me see if I can just recall some of the sports things. May of 1997 was when...
Oh, probably NHL Finals?
Not that I noticed. Oh. But there were a couple of interesting baseball things. One of them was that this is when revenue sharing began. In May of 1997, teams had to start,
went over the luxury tax.
Yeah. And I even, like, tried to figure out, like, how much teams are paying into the now, because I think that the Red Sox are certainly paying into the luxury tax, and I think the Dodgers are paying into the luxury tax still, maybe. I think the Yankees are actually under the cap now.
Wow.
Or the luxury tax threshold. But that might have changed when they traded for Giancarlo Stanton. But the point was, like, I tried to find, like, how much teams are having to pay into now, because in May of 97, the Yankees had to pay $28 million into revenue sharing.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to put that into modern context with how much teams have to pay into it now, and I couldn't find any information.
I feel like it's probably hundreds of millions.
It depends, because it depends on how far over the salary cap you go.
Mm-hmm.
There's, like, different tiers of how much you're giving into revenue sharing. But anyway, that's a conversation for a different time.
Yeah.
There were a couple of notable studio albums, Foo Fighters, The Color and the Shape came out of 1997.
What songs were on that one? I don't know album.
Everlong is on that one.
That's a great song.
I think that has like a bunch of the hit singles.
Yeah.
From them.
I can't
look it up.
Yeah, I'm just doing a quick Google search.
Yeah.
To see if I can just find a track list.
I remember 1997 being a particularly good year if you're into that. Oh yeah, yeah. So OK Computer came out by Radiohead.
That was the other one that that I thought of. Misfits American Psycho was in May of 97.
Yeah. Oasis, Verve.
But the other Foo Fighters songs in The Color and the Shape, Doll, Monkey Wrench, My
Tracks.
Poor Brain, Wind Up, Up in Arms, My Hero, Enough Space, February
yeah.
Stars.
There's some big ones on that for Foo Fighters.
Yeah. But I think, there was some celebrity gossip that I thought was pretty fun. So in May of 1997, Tim Allen was pulled over in Michigan for drunk driving.
Nice.
Remember Tim Allen, kids?
The Tool Man.
And he didn't say the N-word, so he's one up on Mel Gibson.
It's true. If there's one thing you can say about Tim Allen, is he's never let a racial slur slip, to our knowledge.
Coward.
You ass. And then the other one was May of 1997 was when Eddie Murphy got caught trying to pick up that transsexual prostitute.
Oh man.
Which is so much fun.
Eddie Murphy.
Yep. Which I feel like that story would go differently now. Like now, like if in May of 2018 Eddie Murphy were caught picking up a transsexual prostitute, like, look how progressive Eddie Murphy is as he's paying for sex.
Well, think about also Robert Downey Jr., who got basically like was doing like tons of cocaine. So he's totally turned his life around from where he was. You know, he was fucking prostitutes, doing cocaine, just spiraling out of control.
Yeah, good for Marvel. Clean that act up.
Yeah, he cleaned himself up, and it turns out that Tony Stark and. You know, get rid of a cocaine problem. But I mean, it's the same with and also these are younger guys too. That's like, Eddie Murphy was like the fucking king of the
80s. Oh, yeah.
I feel like. He was just on top of the world. So, for him to be there. And like Hugh Grant got caught picking up a prostitute.
When was the last time Eddie Murphy did anything?
He's done quite a few like direct-to-DVD shit.
I feel like he's like living off the luxury of doing voice acting and stuff. He was Donkey for all of those Shrek movies. He was that voice of in Mulan of the little dragon guy who was adorable.
Yeah.
He has those like crappy mansion movies. Haunted Mansion or something. He made some movies with Disney.
Yeah, I remember the one.
So for whatever reason, Disney's cool with him trying to pick up transsexuals.
Yeah, they're fine with it.
You know, or transgender.
Well,
they supply their own
form. It was specifically mentioned that this person he picked up was transsexual, not transgender, and there is a distinction there.
Oh, okay.
Anyway.
Very progressive for the time.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. So, there was one other game. There's a video game that I wanted to talk about that came out in 1997. This one was earlier, and I mentioned before in a previous show, it's called The Last Express. And this is a game from Jordan Mechner, who's a creator of a lot of old PC games. Prince of Persia is the first one that comes to mind. And this is, like I mentioned, a point-and-click adventure, and it uses a very distinct animation style, whereas it uses that technique, rotoscoping, where they're actually using live actors and then animating over them in order to give...
Oh, like Full Throttle? I think Full Throttle and Dragon's Lair were games that were like that, where they actually had live actors perform the things and then animate over them.
Or like that movie Fire and Ice... Or like a Scanner Darkly.
Oh, Ralph Bakshi. Oh man, he's great.
Yeah.
Or Scanner Darkly.
But this game.
Richard Linklater. Give me more movies. I'll tell you the director.
So this game is very much, in a lot of ways, a game that plays itself.
Sorry, one more time. What was the title of the game?
The Last Express.
The Last Express.
The setup for the game is because it's very narrative focused. You are this. This character whose friend is on the Orient Express, and it's like weeks before the outbreak of World War I.
Mm-hmm.
And he invites you onto this train, and you board this train, you're late for the train, you have to catch up to it, and you find your friend murdered. And I mentioned this game before because I remember distinctly having the conversation. One of the first things you would have to do is take the body of your dead friend and throw it out the window, and then... Kind of an imposter, your friend.
Oh.
So, this game is very much about having conversations at the right times with the right people. And I played this game years ago, back when it was new. And there was a point in the game where I just hit this wall and I couldn't figure out what to do next. Mm-hmm. So you're walking around this train. And this is very timing based. All the other characters on the train have their own schedule. They have their own business. They're going about very much like a Majora's Mask.
Yeah.
And what you need to do is there are little items that you need to find throughout the train and sort of intercept these characters on their path in order to sort of alter their routes so that you end up having these conversations. Basically, like the main thrust of the game is that your friend who was murdered, you're trying to figure out who did it, but then also he got himself involved in this arms deal that is being used to spark the fires that are going to start a world war. Because Germany wants a world war, Germany wants a war, and there's this like an Austrian secret police agent on the train as well who's also aware of the plot. You end up sort of working together in order to thwart the whole thing.
Hmm. Actually, I found some of the actual live action.
Oh, nice!
Pre-rotoscoping.
Oh, get out of here!
It's very cool. Yeah.
And, you know, at the time, the animation was really fun because, you know, this is, like, the most lifelike animation you've seen in a video game to that point. But, you know, it is quite choppy in retrospect. So I got to a point in the game where I just could not progress any further. There's, like, this concert that's being put on, and during the concert you can, like, come and go as you please, but it also allows you to actually get into different compartments and train cars that you are unable to access because they're occupied by people who keep telling you to get out. And during this concert, like smack in the
middle.
Who's
the murderer, by the way? Is it this redheaded lady? She looks like she's probably killing people.
No, it was this other group. It was a group of for this fucking 21-year-old kid. There's a group of Serbian nationalists who are on the train as well.
I don't know if she's not a Serbian nationalist.
She's Austrian. She's the Austrian secret police agent.
It does look pretty choppy. She could be Serbian.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, do you guys get down?
It's implied.
Yeah.
It's implied, but never, of course, shown. It's a game in 1997.
They just blurred the pixels?
Yeah. So at that point in the game, this is where I couldn't figure out what I was supposed to do next. And actually, in a couple of different segments at work, I was watching a playthrough of the game. And it takes, from start to finish, like about 4 hours to play through. So I would just like watch 20 minutes here and there over a course of a couple of weeks. And basically what I was unable to figure out is that there's a way you can get on top of the train, which I never figured out, and then you have to go to the back and smash through a skylight on the train and then basically rob a guy. You rob a guy of this
of
gold.
His virtue? Oh. Gold. Sorry.
Gold, yes. You rob a guy of his gold. And again, there's no repercussions. He knows it's you. You flat out like tell him that it's you. It's after you get to past that part in the game. And he's just cool with it. And he's got a broken skylight in his compartment, his private compartment now, and glass all over the floor, and it's fine. You just move on, which
now,
is weird.
Now, could it be like, now you say you figure out to go onto the top of the train car and go and do all that. Is it like Myst, where you don't really need to play through the game, you just gotta know the code, and boom, there's the white book?
No, you do actually have to, like, because it is very narrative-based. Okay. You have to, what you're doing is basically trying
skip to the end.
Yeah, complete these conversations, like these transactions with people in order to continue the story. Because if you mess something up, if you don't talk to the right person, if you don't find the right items, like if you don't get the gold, the German guy who you're trying to buy arms from the Serbian nationalists will say, you haven't paid me, I'm getting all my merchandise off at the next stop. Then he leaves, and of course, you fucked up the deal, so the Serbian nationalists who killed your friend then come kill you. So basically, you're just trying to keep the wheels turning until you get to the end of the game.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I think there's this time mechanic to it where
you normally hate plot, and it sounds like this game is almost entirely plot.
It is almost entirely plot. It's almost entirely having conversations with people. Which,
it's like how I feel about the game Mass Effect. Like, I have some friends that were super into Mass Effect, and I feel like every time they would be like, oh, this game's so fucking amazing, I love Mass Effect. And I would watch them
so much talking.
It was dialogue trees.
Oh
my
god.
Just non-stop fucking dialogue
trees. I started playing that Beyond Two Souls because it's supposed to, like, look amazing and everything like that. I didn't think it would be a good game, and it really, really isn't. It's god-awful. But the entire game is conversations and quick time events.
That would drive me insane.
That is the entire game.
Well, there's a big game out right now, that Detroit game.
Yep, that's another one of those games.
I was actually like just browsing through some Metacritic reviews, and it's stunning to me how many reviews focus entirely on story. Mm-hmm. Like there is a video game. Like in between all this narrative,
I
right?
I like a good story, John. I was a bad story. I want nothing to do with it.
Which is fine. Like that's great. But when 90% of your review is about something that should be like 10% of a game at most.
The narrative.
Yeah.
I mean that's a good point, and maybe that's the style of game lends itself to being intentionally more narrative. It's not like we're playing StarCraft here.
No, you're playing through a movie. You're playing the movie.
Yeah.
And that's stupid.
And there's room enough in the world for that. But then when you take the way that you approach criticism of a game, like a visual novel, like a graphic novel, mm-hmm. And you apply those same sort of critiques to a game that's not trying to be narrative focused, and you're like, oh, where's the narrative in this game? Like, well, it's not trying to do that. There needs to be a distinction between, like, this is a game where we just want you to experience the story and you're not doing much in the way of gameplay.
Yeah. But again, I think it's also that decisions have consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's where you find the replay value, is that you yourself are injected into the story in such a way where it's not just that you have to pick up a gun or something, or have to pick up items and find, like, the game we're going to talk about, frankly, is literally just about finding keys for doors.
Yeah.
You know, like, is that any better of an experience playing a game than, say, like, literally watching a novel unfold in front of you? Especially one that's designed after one of the greatest murder mysteries ever made, you know. Mm. I mean, whether, I don't know, it does not seem like this is at all a telling of the murder on the Orient Express.
No.
But based on what you told me about the story, it's not really about that, so. I don't know.
I think it does draw some inspiration, but it's a different sort of narrative.
Well, think about, like, Full Throttle. Did you guys play Full Throttle, by any chance? It was a PC game around this time?
No.
But it was the same, it was like a biker gang with puzzles to solve, but it was all rotoscoped, and again, they didn't have they would be cut to these like scenes of really flashy animation, but again it's sort of blurring the line where it's not like this seems like photorealistic because it's literally a film. It's not like it's a fully rendered environment. It's like, it's not like when you pick up Breath of the Wild and it's like you're seeing vast vistas like rendered for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of different. I don't know where I'm going with this, but
anyway, well, this game, The Last Express, is very much like that, where you're
what platform were you playing this on?
I played it on PC. As far as I know, it's only been available on PC. And the game, like, I bring it up because the game perplexed me for so long. Like, I really like those sort of point-and-click adventure games, Myst, Riven, back in the day, which, you know, we'll probably talk about Riven at some point because it came out in 1997 as well.
Mm-hmm.
But
on the N64?
No. No, but we won't limit ourselves entirely. We'll, you know, bring up games that are really important to us. But this game, I think...
Oh, like another 1997 classic, Carmageddon. I had that as a kid, actually. I played it a bunch.
Never heard of it.
Carmageddon, you run over pedestrians. It's great.
Oh, dear God.
Oh, and you try to destroy your opponents, too.
Oh, yeah. but that's
the side thing.
Yeah.
So this is the early days of Twisted Metal.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Actually, I think Twisted Metal might have already been out at this point.
Really?
Yeah, I think the first Twisted Metal was PS1.
Yeah. Well, this is kind of the dawn of the PS1, isn't this?
I think 96, I think, or 95, the PS1 might have come out.
Yeah.
Anyway, but the Last Express always intrigued me because I got a demo for this game on when I bought Myst way back in the day. And that's how I first got exposed to it. I can't remember how I ended up with a copy of it. And for months, like, I would go back and
maybe
try to...
Maybe a relative got it from, like, the kid-friendly section or something.
Yeah, it could be. It could be something like that. But, like I mentioned before, this game is a sort of time mechanic. You actually rewind time and give yourself a chance to redo decisions. Have conversations in a different way or at a different time, which can affect things. But it also, like, allows you to not have to replay the game from the beginning. Like, okay, I think I've messed something up there.
Oh, go ahead, sorry.
I think I might have messed something up here, or there's like someone I should have talked to around this time. Let me skip back to that and see if I can do it.
Well, it's a more long-winded thing, but isn't that... You said this is the creator of that game was associated with the Prince of Persia series, and that the whole game is about rewinding time to not fall into a pit of spikes and die.
Yeah. So, yeah, that is an interesting sort of...
Maybe that was kind of the seed of the idea that would become that.
Yeah, maybe. But... I don't know, I don't really have too much else to say about it. Like, I watched it through to the end because I'm never actually going to play this game again because it's all about walking around having conversations and I'm not interested at all. But I really wanted to see, like, what it was that I kept on messing up.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Some games are actually better consumed that way. I think there's actually a subreddit called Games the Movie or something like that.
Okay.
Where literally is people taking games and
just like giving all the cutscenes.
And sometimes it's just a cutscene. Sometimes they're actually editing in the real gameplay too to make it actually be a full story. They're not like no one's got a microphone and a scripting dialogue over it, but it's essentially playing the game to make the fullest narrative you could out of it.
Yeah, a lot of people do that with Skyrim.
Okay.
What?
Anyway.
Yeah, add that one in.
So
did you hear something, John?
No. I just heard a loud buzzing noise.
Yeah, I know. It's just like my ear is just like ugh.
Boom. Start playing that again too.
Well, yeah, I remember. Sure. But yeah, so Hexen is actually for the N64.
That's a game.
So I would say I'm not gonna go through the whole rundown of what I did last time. I think if anybody really wants to know the chronology of id Software's, you know, crafting wonderful first-person shooters, you can go back and listen to the one we just
did.
You
should. Like, Doom's a different kind of thing, so...
Yeah.
Well, it's different, but it's also very similar.
I think that this is almost it's like a prototype of what Quake would become. Like, I think Quake is stylistically where they wanted to go, but still being Doom. And I think Hexen revels in that same dark occult shit that they were obsessed with. Like, Doom is, of course, hard-boiled, you know, you're on a Mars colony just fighting just these hideous aliens. And then it's like, you go into Quake, which is literally about the elder gods, you know, trying to come and destroy everything. And then Hexen seems to just be like, still, and like, you saw how much all of this lore they're giving, all this dialogue, like, not dialogue, but just like pop-ups of just like, there's, in just like one paragraph, you have like six distinct nouns of things that are supposed to mean something to you. And they all have fucked up names. Like they're all like, you know, like Mayan gods or something. Like it's hard to tell where they're going with this, but it seems like they want there to be like a deep story in here. When really all it is, I don't know, first person gauntlet? Maybe it'd be a good comparison without the whole team element. I mean, it's essentially Doom, but they're trying to make it so that it's class-based.
Yeah, that's a fair comparison. And, you know, I think it's even more apt on the N64 because they do have cooperative as well as deathmatch multiplayer.
Oh, that's true. I mean,
cooperative. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
I've only been playing first person, and we didn't even play together when we were doing it.
Oh, that's true. We even have multiple controllers.
Yeah, we should have.
God, you guys are slackers.
Yeah. And by the way, I haven't, like, crushed this game or anything like that. I still have a very surface level... I mean, on my... N64 cartridge, I've clocked maybe 3 or 4 hours. Not much time. I mean, I played this game 21 years ago. 23 years ago, I played this game.
PC?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I mean, I like all of these games.
Because it is worth mentioning this was a PC game. And it's actually a sequel to a PC game called Heretic. And then the PC version of Hexen is called Hexen Beyond Heretic.
Yeah.
And it's funny because then Hexen gets a sequel, which would, I guess, be the third game in the series. It's called Hexen 2. And then Heretic actually gets a proper sequel called Heretic 2, which is the fourth game in the Heretic series, I guess.
Is there a Heretic X-2?
Maybe.
Where everyone's just in bikinis and everyone's got guns suddenly.
Hopefully.
Wait, no, they already had... No, they didn't have guns yet.
Guns. Oh, they had staves. Yeah.
Maybe they had, like, muskets or something that they could work in.
Crossbows.
Yeah,
crossbows. That's good.
Oh, what was that anime that had caster shells? Like they
Outlaw Star.
They
love that anime.
What was the genius idea? Like they had bullets that had spells in them, and then you shot like so it's like a bullet just rips somebody in half, and they're like, oh, by the way, it's like a big poof spell happens and kind of for the fuck of it.
Nice.
Yeah. It's like no, I just have real bullets, and you're dead. At any rate.
But yeah, so Hexen was, of course, developed by id Software on the PC, but then, published by id Software, but developed by Raven Software on the PC. And Raven Software, you might remember them from X-Men Legends and X-Men Legends 2.
Oh, man, yeah. Those games are fucking wonderful, aren't they?
But that was actually, they were formed in 1990, and sorry, I'm going from memory here. From
I love their research. Logo, too. I don't even, yeah. It doesn't matter what they sold, I would have bought it.
Just slapped it on a box.
It's the vertical blinds. I'm like, I'm getting my Raven vertical
blinds. Vertical blinds and cyanide, that's what they make.
Oh, perfect.
So they were formed in 1990, and they were actually outright bought by Activision. And in 1997. And of course, what typically happens to these Western developers when they get bought up by a bigger one is they collapse. But they didn't. Raven Software stuck around. They with Activision, they made X-Men Legends, X-Men Legends 2. And they're actually also very involved in the Call of Duty series now, so they're still around.
Oh, they made Soldier of Fortune, which was like a very edgy game. Kind of pissed people off. Controversial game, because it was so violent.
Sure.
Like, they literally had crafted animation for shooting a guy in the dick.
I'm sure it probably seems really tame now.
Yeah.
But the what they mainly do at this point is they do assistance with the Call of Duty series. Like, Call of Duty seems to flip back and forth between two main developers, and Raven Software is sort of like the backup to both of them. So they're credited on like every Call of Duty game that's coming out. So it's nice that they're still around. But when Raven Software got bought out in 1997 by Activision, a bunch of the main guys who started the studio left and formed their own studio called Human Head Games, I believe. And they made that game Prey a while back. And they've also done like pen and paper RPGs and board games as well. They don't strictly do video games, which is kind of fun. Cool. But yeah, so still around.
That kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, if you play Hex and you can kind of feel a very Dungeons and Dragons kind of vibe.
Yeah. But it's cool. I really like the sort of like Wild West nature of Western video game companies in the late 90s and early 2000s, because everyone was buying a piece of everybody else. Mm-hmm. And you could see like, this is where like the big companies get formed, your Activisions, your EAs, because they just outright buy other smaller things and sort of add to themselves. And the N64 version of Hexen was actually ported by Software Creations. Mm-hmm. And you'd probably recognize their logo from a lot of like Marvel and Disney stuff in the 16-bit era.
Yeah.
So they also were very involved with developing the tech for like the sound and the N64 hardware, which I thought was pretty interesting. Hmm. But after porting Hexen over, they did a few other little projects, but Acclaim, who you might remember from the 90s, was buying off pieces of Software Creations bit by bit until Acclaim outright owned them by 2002. And then Acclaim goes defunct in 2004, and Software Creations right along with them, which is a bit of a bummer.
So that's where their sad story ends. Yeah, 2004.
Yeah, with Acclaim,
which is sad.
Where a lot of sad stories end with Acclaim.
Yeah, true. Oh, this logo. Yeah, I feel like I played a bunch of these games.
But yeah. But those pretty much like the history stuff.
Oh yeah.
That I wanted to get to with these. Like I saw that logo the most when like Spider-Man Venom Separation Anxiety on the Genesis.
God, that was a good game.
But yeah, well,
and of course, Ken Griffey Jr.'s Slugfest for the Game Boy Color.
Of course, yes.
Ripping Friends?
Really prolific. Like, Software Creations made a lot of games.
Yeah.
The Ripping Friends?
I don't know that one.
That sounds weird.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get back into the game proper of Hexen, because it is a game from the Nintendo 64, of course, like we mentioned before.
Yeah.
One of the most interesting things about it is you get three playable characters, like three different classes from the start.
Yeah. You have your fighter, your cleric, and your mage.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be kind of a tanky brawler. You could be a guy that's kind of in the middle. I guess a jack of all trades, master of none. And then you have the mage, which is, again, your pure... If you want to play Doom, you go mage. If you want to play with someone that's a distance shooter, you go with that. Which, and if anything, is great, because they actually have a fully integrated vertical axis. So you can kind of play, well, let's say it ain't perfect, but they do have it so that you can shoot up and down and hit targets that are above you and below you.
Right. We should touch on the controls in a second here, but it is using the Doom engine. And we talked a little bit before how the Doom engine sort of fooled you into the sort of 3D environment. So you'll notice like in Doom, you don't have inclined planes. It's always stairs. And it's because of the trickery that they're pulling off with the limited tech that they were using on the PC. Mm-hmm. So,
and, my God, you have a jump.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah. In Hexen, they're able to pull up some refinements. I'm not sure of the specifics of all the technical stuff they were able to do, but you can actually shoot up stairs at certain points. There are some stairs that are...
Well, I feel like that's a bad example, because literally the first time you tried to shoot up stairs, it wouldn't go.
Right, and I think that might have to do with like how steep the stairs were, because that was a pretty steep incline.
You had a direct line of sight at the guy, though. You should have been able to hit him.
I did, yeah.
But then at the same time, like, you were also able to shoot up and tag the bell tower with your spell, with your wand.
Yeah, the little staff that the mage gets. Mm-hmm. And then there were some enemies that I was able to shoot on a higher plane. But let's get over to the controls, because
yes,
we've talked about... This is the third first-person shooter that we've talked about so far. I found that this was probably the easiest controls to adjust to.
Yeah, I feel like it's actually pretty intuitive. Makes sense. It's the touch is actually pretty good.
Yeah,
it's not bad. It's not slow. It's not slow. It's not too touchy.
And I think they do provide some aim assistance, which is good.
Yeah, and also keep in mind, if you get the first two classes, like, unless you're doing a speed run that gets you items really quickly, like the other weapons you can acquire, you're doing mostly melee stuff.
Yeah.
So accuracy is kind of not that important early on, unless you are the mage, of course, in which case you actually do want to be able to pinpoint. Shoot shit.
Yeah, the warrior class.
And it's also like a laser dot, by the way. It's not like you're casting some little ball that kind of slowly rolls at an enemy. You're literally shooting a little laser beam at it.
Yeah. So, and it really does replicate like just the sort of traditional first-person shooter thing where you're shooting a gun with bullets. They move very quickly. Mm-hmm. So, the warrior class guy, like, he doesn't get a weapon to start out with. He's just going fisticuffs.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah, I think the weapon you pick up with him versus like an axe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a throwback to the other id games where it's like the first thing you usually get is some kind of melee weapon or brass knuckles or... the chainsaw is kind of a luxury, if anything, but, you know, you get... They want you to have up-close gore squirting in your face when you're tearing through something with a chainsaw, you know? They kind of want that visceral violence to it, which is cool.
God bless America.
Indeed.
Yeah.
But
these are American games, by the way.
Oh yeah,
no. It's over. Yeah. They fucking get American children.
Oh yeah, it's a really interesting time for Western games because they're becoming much more prominent. Whereas in like the 8 and the 16-bit eras, like the video game market was so dominated by Japanese games. So, you know, they're Western games. They existed, but at this point, like you're seeing
all those weeaboo dorks playing their Final Fantasy games.
Indeed.
Hey now.
Actually, Wes, you totally had a thought, and I think we're gonna cut you off.
I was gonna ask, what's the difference between the warrior and the cleric?
Oh, the cleric's weapons later on will make it closer to a mage. It also has less armor based on your pickups. I believe the health and mana kind of move up and down depending upon the class you take, of course. So very small mana pool for your fighters versus very big mana pools versus very big health for your fighter versus very little health for your mage. And then the cleric is that sweet spot in the middle for kind of all of this stuff. Again, he is sort of that jack of all trades.
He's okay. He's a red mage.
Okay.
There. Yeah. Made it easy for you.
There you go.
Yeah.
What was I saying? I was saying...
I was calling you guys dorks.
Right. So it's... It's really interesting time for Western games because you are seeing them on the rise, and it has to do a lot with, you know, people who played a lot of 8 and 16 bit games like in their childhood, they're entering adolescence and they're sort of expecting their games to grow up with them, and part of that is expecting games to become more violent and more allowing you to choose what you want to do, give you more options, which is a big staple of Western games, is just having like this buffet in front of you and picking and choosing the things that you want from your game.
Well, and it's also kind of one of the first times we can really portray violence in a weird way. If you think about how primitive a lot of the older games are, like, this is a very weird example.
It's a different type of violence too, because like Castlevania, Contra 3, those were violent games.
True. But and also these two actually kind of revel in satanic stuff. You're surrounded by constant things that remind you of the true evil of religion.
There was a demon skull that popped up on the wall and started talking to you,
which is a really funny distinction, because well, a lot of it also has to do with the sort of censorship, especially on the NES and the Super Nintendo,
because they weren't going to let that fly.
Nintendo was very strict about any sort of religious iconography. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because there's more of a stigma in the United States, especially at that time, about things that could be interpreted as satanic
mm-hmm.
or demonic, like really big, like Dungeons and Dragons fear. Like, don't ever let your children play Dungeons and Dragons; it will turn them into Satan worshippers. That sort
so
of
with, like Magic the Gathering.
Yeah.
I wasn't allowed to play that growing up.
There was a Pokemon panic, like, and being equated on the same level as other things that they panicked about in the 80s.
But that is such an extremist reaction too.
Right, well,
like the whole like endorsing evolution or whatever. Like, I can't believe that anybody...
It's absurd.
You should care more about the fact that it's basically sanctioned dogfighting.
it's true. Being cruel to animals is a lot worse than believing in inherited traits being passed down.
Very, very good point. God, my God, are you running for office anytime soon? Can I give you a vote?
If we get Trump out this year, then sure. What was I about to say? But it's interesting because you do have that stigma, like that sort of puritanical reactionism in America. And you don't have that sort of thing in Japan because they haven't felt religiously persecuted. Like, they're not made up of
people. It seems
like
they're very spiritual. I don't know. I feel like it's I'm not doing a very good job of describing what it is they actually believe because I don't really know what their faith system is. But ours is built around the idea of being absolutely certain that you are right, and that if you do the thing that is wrong, eternal damnation awaits you. And from the time that I've spent absorbing Asian culture through anime, it's so fucking shallow. At no point are they ever like, you know, it seems like you die and then you slip into the ether, and then you're this beautiful ghost that lives forever and gets to be a part of your family or whatever. Like, or the worst case scenario is like, you know, something really tragic happened and you have to be, you know.
It's a really interesting cultural difference because there does seem to be like a sort of like uncertainty. Like, death is a
like
certainty.
No one in Japan is fighting evolution.
Sure.
I'm sure they were just second they heard it, they were like, makes sense. Cool.
But you do have like these they are aware of religious tropes, but you do have these themes in Japanese games, and a lot of Japanese games where your end goal is to kill God, and like it's neither like righteous angels or demons.
True,
or demons. That's the correct path. It's always something in the middle, and humanity is supposed to forge their own path and not really follow one way or the other. Anyway. It's just interesting to me that the sort of what we perceive as like the more violent games end up being like the Western ones, when it seems like Japanese culture has fewer hang-ups about that sort of thing. And like, even maybe it's because they have fewer hang-ups that they don't feel the need to express it in all their art. You know?
Bring up something else?
Are you talking about... Did you look up the penis chariot?
I did not look up a penis chariot.
Okay.
But, because we... You talk
Wait,
about
is that an actual thing? I thought it was just a thing for...
Oh, that was the game?
Shin Megami Tensei.
Yeah. Shin Megami Tensei.
Yeah, it's just a character in that.
Yeah. But why you...
Because, well, that's a game that very much exemplifies that, like, neither the angels nor the demons are correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The penis chariot is.
Right.
Yeah. Well, so, you're talking about... And it's a popular thing to talk about the death of the gods, which is deicide. Whenever you kill a god, it's deicide.
Right.
In the same way that, you know, patricide is the death of a king. There is a death metal band.
I thought that was the death of Patrick.
Stop it.
No. That's Patrickicide.
Oh!
Yeah.
Which we won't see until the new Smash, because SpongeBob and Patrick are going to be in it.
So, there is a death metal band called Deicide, which is actually really, really crucial in creating the sound that is death metal. And believe it or not, they're from Tampa, Florida.
Look at
and
here.
They released their quintessential death metal album, Serpents of the Light, in 1997.
Oh, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, literally just like 80 miles west of here.
Shit. Wow. Was it in May?
October 21.
Ah.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Too bad and so sad. But just in time for Oktoberfest.
Let's listen to death metal and get drunk.
Hey, and that's like every fucking night for me, man. Okay, anyway, wait.
But circling back around to the main point, it's just a really interesting time for Western games, because you're seeing the rise of popularity, which is going to continue sort of in balance to the popularity of Japanese games until you get to basically the HD era, where you see a lot of Japanese developers struggling to adjust to developing to games in with higher resolution and doing things to try to increase the revenue from making games, because games get more expensive to make, they need to sell more copies. And
I thought games were easy to make and cheap.
Both of those are correct, yes. So what you end up seeing is a lot of Japanese game developers trying to make their games more Western by embracing...
Firing their artists.
Right.
Who made all of the beautiful art in their games. It's like, they want guns.
Bob, you made too many penis chariots. All right, we're done with this, all right? He's like, try to play a Mario now. You've gone too far.
You don't meet too many Japanese people named Bob. I like that choice you made.
Yeah, true. Well, and also, like, I feel like, if anything, the N64 launch titles, and it seems like about a year, the first year of the N64, they're prisoners of the moment, where I look at their list of games they have here, and I am seeing nonstop fighters and shooters.
And
sports games, right? Yep. Like, where are all, like, it seems
and
like...
Ship.
There's no more platforming. You get Mario 64, which is a genius of a platformer, right? But beyond that, like... What is it? Like, where exactly are we supposed to go with this? I mean, you're getting like fun arcadey shit. Like Cruisin' USA.
Oh, they all moved over to the PlayStation. We talked a little bit about before, like Squaresoft made a big show about how they're jumping development over to PlayStation, saying, we're never gonna develop for this Nintendo system and everyone else should come with us. Like Square was instrumental in getting NX to stop developing games for Nintendo systems.
Yeah.
So there was this big shift in where Japanese were going to be, which greatly impacted, of course, the N64 library.
Hey, but if they didn't do that, then we wouldn't have a game like Breath of the Wild, right? Like, maybe Nintendo wouldn't have felt obliged to keep their own IP going, like the games that have been so important for them over the decades.
Yeah, who knows what would have happened if, you know, things had gone differently there, but...
Mm-hmm. Maybe we'd have even more... Mario RPG games?
You have like
why did that ever stop?
A cross wall.
It did not stop.
Well, I did that stop.
It didn't. It didn't stop. They just call it Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga now, and they've made like five of them, six. And it's actually like the team that made Super Mario RPG, like the director of that game who worked at Square Enix,
or Square Sticker Mario game,
right? The guy who directed Mario RPG, who's with Square at the time, now works for Nintendo at the development house Alpha Dream, and they're stuck making Mario and Luigi games forever. Like they keep them in cages. I assume.
Oh, I'm sure it's one of those things where like the panel slides open and the tray with maggots of food gets dropped down. And he's like, thank you.
Can we make a different game? No. No, you can't. Remake Bowser's Inside Story right now. I would like to see Alpha Dream make a different game. Like, a different Mario RPG, or just
instead of RPG or something.
Sure, or instead of just like Mario and Luigi, make it Wario and Waluigi. Like, here, get weird with this.
That's as far
of the path they can diverge at this point. Yeah. Anyway, Hexen is the game for the Nintendo 64.
Yeah. Okay. So what is it? So what is Hexen doing that makes it not Doom? I think it is very clearly working in lots of RPG elements, and I think that's something you can really embrace with it. And the fact that it actually feels much more modern. Like from playing Doom 64, and Doom 64 again is its own creation. Like we saw the drastic change from Doom 64 to just like vanilla Doom that maybe you played on a PC, or versus the Doom that found its way to the SNES.
Right.
Right, and in the same regard, Hexen seems to be an even, you know, not it's not breaking new ground, but it is certainly a better take on what they were doing with Doom 64.
Yeah.
And it seems like, just from exploring the world, it's a lot more realized, a lot more detail. When something gets right on top of you, it's a little crunchy and pixely. To be expected, and I'm sure we're going to see this across many, many games.
Right, because Doom. It is using, it's creating this illusion of 3D space. You do have 3D space, but then all of your like enemy assets are sprites.
Yeah.
So you do get, from a distance, they look a lot better than they do up close.
Mm-hmm. And I'd say that this is less about run and gun, and it's less about the mayhem and bullet hell of Doom, and more literally about kind of just puzzling.
Yeah, there's adventure elements. You have to do things. You have to find the keys, which unlock the doors, or you have to find the switch on the wall, which will,
you know, open a door. Like, these are, like, really early Zelda-type elements.
Yeah, and again, we're talking about armor, and all the armor that you equip on your character, and it's not like you're picking up armor shards like you would in Doom. You're literally equipping a helm, a chest piece, and a shield. You have legitimate armor you can collect throughout the game.
And you hold these things in your inventory.
Yeah.
So when you upgrade that sort of armor, does it just replace the ones you currently have? Do you have to drop it?
I honestly, I'm not sure. I think it's just sort of the one item. I think you just get the item in the same way that, like, Link gets his lift gloves or whatever.
Sure. Yeah. You got your.
But even then, I think he has two layers of lift gloves. No, it's just, and it stacks for the characters. So if you are the fighter, the melee type that doesn't really get to use a lot of distant spells, your armor is greatly increased relative to a mage. Yeah, so it's like all three of you will equip the same shield, but the shield in the fighter is going to be three times as effective as the shield in the mage.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And then it just kind of, again, it balances the gameplay.
Yeah.
There's like a dozen items that do all kinds of interesting things in the game. There's literally one that can sustain flight. So that's very cool. And you have, of course, the invincibility, all kinds of fun stuff. And the weapons are also unique based on the class that you pick. So, for example, and again, you're gonna find that they're basically like not reskinning, but they're
like cosmetic changes for the same function.
Bingo. So, like, the second mage weapon you get casts these ice shards, but if they were just pellets, you would be shooting a shotgun, right? Like, they can't hit damage far away, but if you get right up on top of something and all of the individual shards hit, the same way that all the pellets of a shotgun shell would, you do a lot more damage.
One of the interesting things about that ice shard in the video I was watching is that the player wasn't able to kill anyone using the ice shard. He kind of had to freeze them over and then switch back to his staff. Which would then foreshadow.
I think it doesn't do an outright kill. I think it is like a stop and like a delay.
Which, you know, for a
like
mage.
HP drain or whatever.
Yeah, for a mage makes sense, because once the enemy gets close enough to you, you're going to start taking damage, because like the regular staff attack isn't very strong.
Mm-hmm. Also pretty limited on the monsters. Not a lot of enemies in the game. I mean, there are a lot of enemies, but a lot of the same enemy. Like, how many times are you going to see the friggin' ogre.
Two-headed thing.
Yeah, like, you just mow through hundreds of those guys.
There's tons of siblings coming at you.
Yeah. One of the fun ways to watch it is actually in speedruns, because if you look at the speedruns out there, they're interesting. And because you have three different modes to play, and I think five difficulties, and it goes from being on its most difficult, being sort of like a resource management nightmare, where you're just constantly running out of stuff and needing stuff. It's very, very difficult. But then on the upper end, it becomes a speedrunner's dream, where it's all about tagging switches at the right time and then just blasting through the maps as quick as you can, fighting as few things as possible. It's kind of interesting to see really, really talented people play the game and how they get through it, whether it's, you know, the onslaught of trying to destroy everything versus just simply trying to, you know, get your green key, get your silver key, hit that switch on the wall, and then get out of the fucking way.
Hmm. You know? Yeah. I actually want to circle back around to the controls, because I don't think we're finished that off.
So,
we didn't address that.
There's two different control schemes. You have, like, the analog stick control, and you also have the D-pad control. We didn't really mess with the D-pad control, but that doesn't mean that the D-pad is completely useless. The D-pad is how you look up and down, which is nice and awkward, because you have to actually stop controlling with the analog stick and reach over.
Now, what do you use the C's for? Can you just map? Mm.
No, you can't.
One C is a map. One toggles your inventory.
Right. So yeah, you have which what you're saying, Wes, makes sense. Like, it would be better if they used the D-pad to do things like toggle inventory or pull up the mini map. And also, they should pause the game while you have the map pulled up, because I got into some trouble because I was accidentally laying bombs on myself.
Yeah.
When I was just trying to look at the map and see if I could scroll around in it.
I guess the game expects you to maybe want to navigate with the map up, but if you can't see anything, everything's killing you.
Yeah.
The whole map, like, the game is very, very mean and vindictive.
And
things just kill you.
I was trying to just move around using the map, and I was moving in directions that, I was pushing up on the control stick, but I was moving left on the mini map, and it was because I kept on running into things, and the game was pushing me around the other side. Like all those beautiful JPEGs of trees that they have in there. So, Wes, yeah, it makes much more sense to have that sort of thing on the C face buttons because it makes more of a dual stick setup like that. But I think that the way they handle strafing was pretty good because you're, of course, just moving around freely with your analog stick and then you hold the Z trigger to start strafing, which I think works pretty well.
Yep.
And then, of course, you have your fire button, then your jump button, which is also your interact button, how you pull switches and open doors and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Which is a little confusing. Do you want to have to jump every single time you want to just open a door?
Or, you know, can I open this door or not? I'm just kind of jumping next to it, just making sure you're in the right spot.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the controls worked pretty well overall. Easy to adjust to. They weren't nearly as confusing. Once you start getting moving in the game, it makes sense where things are mapped out. You never really had to think about, okay, well, I need to press this in order to move this direction or that direction.
Yeah. And also, it's not that demanding of a game in that regard, too. We really are essentially just moving around, jumping, shooting, aiming occasionally. Mm-hmm. I think if aiming was a more crucial element of the game, it would matter.
Yeah, because it has a pretty wide auto shot.
Yeah, it's very friendly in that way. And that might also have to do with the difficulty level. I turned it
by the way, let's not act like the N64 is just like this abomination of a controller. It's like the dual analog stick on, and trying to play any first-person shooter on a console has always felt uncomfortable for me. It's never good. There isn't a good one, in my mind. I don't care what Halo game you're talking about, or Call of Duty, or whatever the hell. It's like, it's never as accurate as simply WASD and a mouse. You know?
Yeah, that's a thing. Like, I was doing, I don't want to say research, but I was debating, I wanted to play Overwatch.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I ended up getting a PC because Jeff got it and Mitch got it. So I'm like, all right, let's get this on PC so I can play with them. But I was debating, I was like, should I just get this for my console? Because they had a free trial for Overwatch before it came out.
Do they not do crossplay?
No.
Oh, that's right. Sony doesn't like that.
No,
Sony doesn't like to do crossplay.
No, they don't like playing with people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think you could do it from like Xbox to Microsoft PC. I don't think you can.
I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I know there are a lot of things you can. Things like Rocket League and Minecraft.
Well, I hate to say it, but so Fortnite has actually become a thing about this, where it's like people, because I guess you can play it on your phone or whatever.
It's becoming crossplay. Like, it's not yet.
Well, people have been putting splitters into their phones with a mouse.
That's fun.
And they've been playing the game with the mouse, and
oh my god,
they are instantly 10 times better. Like, they're crushing. Like, the you know, it's funny, and they've been showing like side by side comparisons of people just mopping up the game with other people who are just like fumbling around on their phone trying to look at stuff while they're just like bang 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 bang, like it's a fucking, you know, John Wick film or something.
No, but I was debating this, and yeah, on PC, if you get good with that mouse and everything like that, like, I can't aim worth shit on the PC. Because it's too sensitive and everything is like, you really gotta be precise because it's so precise. When on like a console, I felt like a god playing Overwatch on the console. Like, get wrecked, noobs. Like, it was fantastic. Yeah,
it's sloppier in my mind.
It's sloppier.
But also a certain class, like a Widowmaker.
But there's less skill on it. Like, the people playing on console are not going to be as good as the people who play primarily on PC. Those people can do crazy sick stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Where on console, I mean, it's just, it's not as precise and it's not as smooth and everything as like a PC getting. Yeah. I'm agreeing with you. That's what I'm saying.
But
there's a long-winded version to say, yes, I agree, Ryan.
Now, here's the thing, though. So, well, I guess what you're saying is like,
but I suck at PC gaming. PC gunners.
But like, so you're saying like Widowmaker is the dream PC character to play, whereas like what, Trombjorn is like the dream console player where all you're doing is putting on a turret and like tossing out armor and shit?
Well, I mean,
or like Reinhardt. Like,
then yeah, well, it depends. Like, if you're like a big PC gamer, then yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But me, I'm a console gamer, and so I probably would be fine with Widow on console. But on PC, I'm not used to the precision of a mouse and keyboard, so I can't aim worth shit on PC. So on PC, I'm like, let's play Reinhardt and swing a giant hammer. I'm not gonna miss with that.
Yeah.
Like, it's,
I don't know. I played it so much Counter-Strike when I was younger that like, I got so into it where it was just like being perfectly accurate like pixel perfect accuracy with your rounds as you're shooting is just like, feels really, really good.
Yeah.
So the idea, like, always, whenever, every time I've ever played a console first person shooter, it just rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah, I've never been very good at dual stick first person shooters either. I think the generally it's the ideal setup is considered to be PC still, mouse and keyboard. But I don't know.
And I was always will be. They're not going to make the two fucking joysticks that make more sense than a fucking mouse.
If I could have an analog for movement on PC,
mm-hmm.
I think that'd be easier. Because I don't like the WASD. That drives me nuts.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And maybe, I mean, that's the other thing is, like, you want to think about, like, crouch, shift, and space are also your, or your control, shift, space is also your
my
crouch,
hands, like, run, sore by the time jump. I get done playing video games.
And you're kind of contorting your entire hand. I don't know, it feels so natural to me, but I can imagine just being like, what the fuck is
like,
all
I have
nonsense?
A hard time with buttons. That was the big thing, like, I'm not great at other games. I'm not a great PC gamer, but I would like to be. But I'm not quick at things on the PC, like when you're playing World of Warcraft, you're moving around with WASD, but then you have to use mm-hmm. all your abilities on the number bar, and so you had to, like, quick hit, which is terrible, because I'm seeing her, like, the only ones I'm really good with is, like, 1 through 3, but all the other abilities I'm shit at, because I can't get my, like, I can't remember exactly, I don't have the muscle memory to be like, there's 6. I have to look at the keyboard, like, which one's 6. Like, I feel like an old man trying to type
what
out
about,
his
what
name.
About, like, if you had, like, a, the calculator pad on the end of the keyboard there.
Oh, that's worse.
Yeah,
that's not gonna be good.
I remember
I can use that thing without looking.
I was really young, I used to rebind the arrow keys to be my movement, and then it just made everything feel awkward. And I was using, like, literally, like, my left hand on the buttons, and that didn't make any sense. I don't know. And remember that the F does have that little indent for a reason. That is always your safe space. Just you make sure your index finger is always on that F, and you will find your key. You just gotta.
I had to remap all the abilities in World of Warcraft to, like, buttons around the WASD.
Yeah.
So I could be like, I know where WASD is. Like, it's...
What are we talking about?
You're both wrong. The ideal setup for a first-person shooter is Wii Remote and Nunchuck.
Oh, hey, that is the truest input possible.
I did like Call of Duty World War II. I did enjoy that game.
Yeah. Metroid Prime 3, man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so Hexen is also a first-person shooter. But I think we're getting to the end. Like, do we have anything else we want to say about Hexen?
We did a deep dive already with Doom 64. I really feel like Hexen, we're just basically, this is like, icing on the cake.
It's iterative. It's like a next step, like, different flavor of the same.
If for some reason that you just fucking couldn't get enough of Doom 64, and you're like, why isn't there more Doom 64? It's like, well, good news, there's Hexen.
And it came out 2 months later.
Yeah, it literally came out 2 months later. And hey, hang on to your pants here, because we're going to have some Duke Nukem coming your way before
you and then GoldenEye after that, you know?
GoldenEye after that.
First person shooter to keep on rolling.
I think GoldenEye was before that. Duke Nukem 64 is like...
I think GoldenEye was August or September?
Yeah, it's August, and then Duke Nukem's like December.
Oh, yeah, so just a few months later.
Yeah.
So
wow, right. Look at me having some... N64 knowledge.
Yeah. Alright, so we gotta get to the really important task here of ranking this game. Where does it go? Ooh. So, our current ranking, and we won't have to, like, once we get further into the show, we'll be able to do this every time.
Yeah.
But just so for point of reference here, at number one, we got Mario 64.
Right.
We put Doom at number two.
Because it's a good game.
Second best Nintendo 64 game. Then Blast Corps.
Yeah.
Mario Kart 64 at number 4. Pilot Wing 64. Wave Race 64. Killer Instinct Gold. And Turok at number 7. So where does Hexen go?
I think it goes... Oh, God. See, because I want to put it above Mario Kart. But I feel like it's too close to Doom 64.
Well, you know, we've only ranked
the first
5
of this list is mostly gonna be shooters.
Well, because that's what they're fucking releasing. Like, you know, I mean, we're not gonna review fucking Top Gear Alley.
No,
right?
We're not.
I mean, do we want to put more stuff at the bottom of the barrel? Does Turok need company? We can review
multi-racing championship.
I'd have a hard time putting it above Mario Kart 64 because it is so iterative.
Yeah, I actually think it goes. It was that, and then Pilot Wings.
Pilot Wings and Mario Kart 64.
I know we're ranking based on release date. So if this came out before Mario Kart 64, I mean, if this came out before Doom. Would that have helped its case? Because it wouldn't be iterative?
That's a fair point. Hmm.
Well, this is also a port. Doom 64 was a creation.
Oh, that's true.
That one I'll give you. That one I will give you.
Yeah. This isn't like... They didn't call it Hexen 64. It is simply Hexen.
Then I have a hard time putting this on the ranking anyways. Because technically this isn't an N64 game. This is a...
Port. No. That's cheap. Don't do that. Come on.
I think that's our spot, actually. I think we put it above...
Pilot Wings, below Mario Kart?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
Is that number four? Because that's what I said.
Number five. That would make it number five.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that works for me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't particularly think that, you know, Wave Race or Killer Instinct could deserve to be above Hexen. Like, they're fine games.
Yeah, I'm not playing Wave Race above Hexen.
Like, they're, and none of these games are bad.
But the water.
Like, we haven't...
They animated water in such a way that I'm supposed to care.
I think, well, you know, we won't. I won't digress.
Did you notice how wet the pixels were?
If Turek wasn't such garbage, how about Wave Race on the bottom?
Wave Race is fine.
Yeah.
It's not. Wave Race does take some getting used to. The course actively fights back on you, but, you know. It's like using dual analog sticks or first-person shooter. Sometimes, like, it doesn't make sense for some people, and it's fine. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right,
like
go.
Juggling, you know? I'll never figure out juggling. The world's greatest juggler could train me for a year, and I wouldn't know how to juggle.
And you'd be like, can I just do it too? Can I just do it?
Look at this guy.
There we go. All right, so here we go. So the ranking now is Mario 64, Doom, Blast Corps, Mario Kart 64, Hexen, Pilotwings, Wave Race, Killer Instinct, Turok.
I forgot Blast Corps. That's where my confusion was.
Mm-hmm.
That is the objective list of ranking Nintendo 64 games so far.
Yeah.
So that's gonna bring this show to a close.
Can I bring up something real quick? This is actually a very sad thing.
What do you have in mind?
Because I think we are gonna do another show tonight.
If you guys have time, we can do an After Dark.
Yeah, I'd be about it.
We're gonna do that.
Okay.
But some very very sad news, and I guess this is as decent a place to put a button on it. A great video game streamer who I love so much his content, Total Biscuit. He passed away from cancer yesterday.
Oh, man.
He's been fighting for about 2 years and was literally producing content up until about 2 months ago when he kind of just went dark. And after that, he was basically just succumbing to cancer. Very, very sad.
I haven't heard of him.
You've never heard of him? No. He was initially big in World of Warcraft, StarCraft. He actually became a really good broadcaster, like a color commentator for StarCraft.
Mm-hmm.
Just made some of the most in-depth technical reviews. Like, IGN should be ashamed at the content that they create compared to what he would do for a small-scale indie release. He would make a hour-long review of the game where the first 20 minutes are literally in the options menu. Just breaking down. Because he's so thorough. He is the most professional video game reviewer there ever was. Like, you just need to pick a game you love and go look at his hour and a half breakdown of the initial thoughts of Skyrim. You know, I mean, I don't know if he has a Skyrim video, but just so much great content he's made over the years. Really, really smart. Gets the technical side of it. Again, it's not just being like, I like this style of game or I like this style of game. He is talking about the nuts and bolts of how games are built, when a game is made right. Technical aspects, and then just on top of that, just genuine enjoyment of it. Plays across all consoles and PCs, plays all different styles of game. So sad, really so sad to see this guy go. I don't know any other, he's probably number one on the list of just people I know that talk about video games that are wonderful people. So that's a little eulogy there. It's a shame, but check him out. Never too late. Posthumously, Go check him out. His name's Total Biscuit.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's going to bring this one to a close. We're going to do an After Dark, but that'll probably be the last show we post in the month of May.
Mm-hmm.
We do... The next show that's not an After Dark is going to be an official show, which we will do, but that probably won't post until June, because we're running out of days in the month here.
It's the 25th on day of recording.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's a ton to get to. Like, the official show is going to be long.
Mm-hmm.
There are a ton of games and topics that we got to address. But, yeah, that's the end. Until next time, everybody.
So long.
Later.
you know, there's that brief hill right there. This is before that overpass was built, too. Mm-hmm. So there's no overpass. Ooh. And you know, there's that brief hill that's right there. Yeah, so we get over the hill, and the car starts going off. Oh, like, because there's now momentum. Like, so it's going.
Yeah.
And I'm in the front and trying to steer and everything like that. And John is in the back pushing it. All of a sudden, I hear, "Keep going," and John drops his keys and goes back for him, and I got this car that I can't fucking stop.
The brakes still work.
The door was closed and I'm steering it. Yeah, like I have time to crack it open to get in real quick.
You probably weren't trying hard enough then. Yeah.
And this car is coming out of that parking lot, and I'm afraid, like, oh shit, I'm gonna T-bone the fuck out of this car right now. Mm-hmm. But it slows down a little bit, and I get in this parking lot, and I'm pushing a little bit. I'm like sweating and freaking out, having a heart attack. I turn around. John's like, "Take his leisure time, walking down the sidewalk." Do, 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 do.
Mm-hmm. I was singing. It's true.
Son of a bitch.